Yeah. Awesome. Bring it on.
So how does it make you,
feel?
Yeah.
Hello, welcome to Three Men and a Feeling, and this week, John Hendry, Andrew Fuller, and myself are going to talk about feeling something and that impact that then has on other people around you. It's, in the worst possible circumstance, a contagion of feeling. And look, I should issue a warning too. There may be parts of this conversation that aren't for young ears. So if anyone is listening in the car with children, then perhaps, you know, close us down and come back to us as a podcast. Now, the contagion of feeling, John Hendry, can I start with you on this? I take it it could be a wonderful thing if the feeling that you're spreading is a feeling of
joy.
And in fact, you know, I'm thinking about some of those amazing political movements, the Arab Spring.
When the wall came down.
The wall came down. Yeah, that's right.
Well, we see it where people are gathered together, where a sense of excitement has brought people together. And then all of a sudden, everyone is captured by this.
Beatlemania.
That verged on hysteria, though.
Yes. But then fear, which is the opposite, can be contagious. And it's very powerful. All of a sudden, we are all operating in that one feeling field, if you like.
Now, Andrew, I did warn people at the front of this conversation that we may get into an area that is slightly uncomfortable for young ears, and we're about to embark on that area of contagion of feeling or thinking now. Tell us about a particular province in China.
So psychology is full of this sort of phenomenon of contagion. And one of the examples of that occurs in the southern provinces of China, where there's a condition called koro, which is a belief that occurs for some men that their penis is retracting into their body. And if it retracts fully, that they will die. And so these men become quite hysterical about this and invoke local people, neighbours, family members to hold on to the penis to prevent it from retracting.
For how many hours a day?
Well, 24 hours a day, really. It's a full-time job.
And do the family and friends and social circles acquiesce and do this?
Oh, definitely. They join in the hysteria and believe they can't let go otherwise.
So everyone who's involved in this believes this is going to happen if this action isn't taken?
Absolutely.
And how did this originate?
Well, no one's really quite sure. We know that there are phenomenons really throughout history of this. For example, in Middle Europe, in the Middle Ages, there were spontaneous outbreaks of hysterical dancing. So we've seen a number of phenomenons of this type of behaviour that occur, and they're often cultural, they're often local.
People may think, oh, well, that's just ridiculous, and there's nothing about the way I behave that gets anywhere close to that. Yo-yos, planking, selfies.
Mm.
These are all contagions of behaviour that spread like wildfire through nations and cultures globally.
Tattooing, piercings. There's so many of these things that really become ways of us badging ourselves as belonging. And we can belong through our strengths or we can belong through our differences.
We want to be seen to be part of others. So we want to be seen to be of some sort of worth. So if everyone's sad, then we want to be empathic, share that with them. So contagion is very important. But young people and self-harm, this is contagious as well. So
and we've seen that in communities up and down the country.
We have.
Look at the suicide rates of young men in both Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities.
We see that basically the way that we express and feel our emotions affects not only our family and friends, but it also affects their families and friends, and it affects their families and friends. So it's, if you like, at least a 3 degrees of kind of influence, which means if you've got, say, 20 immediate contacts, and all of those people have also got 20 immediate contacts, your emotions directly influence 8,000 people. So it's a very powerful position to be in.
And that's not just based on current science. It's not just the 8,000 people who are living in your time too, because the latest research into epigenetics and transformational behaviour through generations.
It's intergenerational.
Intergenerational says that the feelings you're feeling now can imprint upon the genes that go down to your grandchildren.
Yes, the fascinating research, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so, yes, the investment that we make in having a more complete and happier life is a gift that we send to our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
No pressure then.
That's right. But at least we know this stuff, and we know that we have an effect. It also means also that we can blame our ancestors for most of our flaws. That's
I think we've been doing that anyway without this science. But I mean, flippancy aside, there's a couple of things here. As you've mentioned, John, the contagion of feeling can be a great source of strength. How then do we know when we should go against the flow, because that contagion could lead to things we don't want?
Well, let's just look at behaviour. The term I use is an upstander. How can you stand up and actually say, no, this is not what we should be doing?
Particularly when you have a flood of people going around you going, no, we're still going this way.
Yes.
You can do what you like, but we actually see you as a renegade and a maverick and an outsider and someone not to be trusted.
I think it's about being true to yourself, really, and finding a way. I mean, we're very compliant, really, as a culture. We want to belong at almost any expense. And so...
But how do you know you're being true to yourself? When feeling compliant feels so right, maybe that is being true to yourself.
Well, there's times, of course, to run with the herd, but there's times to sit back from the herd and look at where it's running and think about what's morally right for myself and for the people that I'm with, I think. And to hold to the truth of who you are. So, for example, denigration of people is a very contagious process, humiliation of people. And while it can be compelling to join in a fairly cruel kind of way, often you feel at the end of it that you've belittled yourself. We're often ashamed of basically letting our own standards down. And so it's a good reason to feel a bit of that internal shame and not to act on it, to actually go against the trend.
So therefore, the contagion warning signs, when it's actually not healthy and safe to do so, perhaps one of them is if the contagion of feeling surrounds the denigration of another part of the community. Is that a warning sign?
That's right. So when basically you're almost invoked to dislike or judge or hate people that you have no reason to hate, really, they've never done anything to you, then you must wonder why you're doing these actions or thinking these thoughts.
Yes, who is directing your thoughts? I worry at times about children sitting around dinner tables, although they probably don't a lot now, but I worry about sitting around and the adults that are sitting at the table are in fact discussing in a way that's not helpful for these young people. They're judging others badly and they're talking, did you see what she did or what he did? And
Well, can I come back to you and say, even more damaging than that, I think, these days is the digital dinner table.
Yes.
Where, in fact, they're absorbing information off a screen where people are expressing sometimes the most extreme views, because that's the freedom that we've bought into with the digital world. It's a good freedom to have, but it can be used badly.
Yes.
And they're absorbing that information as gospel. In fact, unlike a dinner table, sometimes they're just passive observers, whereas at least at a dinner table, there may be a vague chance with the people you know
and love. Someone arrested.
Yeah, there might be a discussion. There might be a debate.
That's true.
May not happen with teenagers every day. It might be a bit monosyllabic, but at least there's a potential for that.
Very true.
This is where in schools we try and help young people to learn an important lesson. And the lesson is that we can have a difference of opinion, we can have a disagreement, and we can still be friends. This is something Australians aren't very good at, I find. If we have a bit of a difference of opinion, that means, you know, our friendship's over. We're not going to hang around with this people anymore. And that, of course, runs the risk that we all create a bubble of agreement around ourselves, which becomes then self-fulfilling.
It's called the echo chamber.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's not good for any of us. I think it's always good to, you know, mix with people with diverse opinions and to think about ways of doing that and be prepared to kind of challenge your own viewpoint about things as well.
But you have to be so adept at self-analysing that you know where you stand on a bunch of issues and are at ease with that to allow other people's issues in.
Well, this is the challenge of the modern world. I mean, we're so bombarded with so many opinions. We live in a world where social media makes everyone's opinion equal, whether they're expert or ignorant. And so you need to be thinking about, how do I have a filter? How do I sift out the valuable parts of that from the ludicrous, really? And so that requires a degree of critiquing and thinking about the value of things that probably wasn't necessary because you had other people around you who are helping you to do it.
Right.
And so it means that really the sort of work that John and I both do in schools is so important because it requires young people to be worldly and thoughtful and reflecting in a way that we didn't require of young people previously, I think.
How do you encourage that to happen?
Well, one of the things I know about working with young people is always if you start with their accessing their inner whinger, that's a powerful place to begin. They like to complain about things. So they're good at complaining about stuff. So their inner whinger is strong and they've got a good BS detector. And so if we could kind of really help them to whinge about the BS that they see in the world, it's a good place to begin. We want our young people to have a degree of protest about the world. In fact, if we live in a world where young people just go, oh, well, that's it, or we come back to the indifference, that's not good for our society. We need to have people who critique what's going on and go, what a load of BS. We need to do things differently.
Challenge the status quo.
That's right.
But at the same time, be tolerant of other people's differences of opinion.
That's right. It's a funny mix, isn't it? But
yeah.
At the same time, yes, there's got to be a diversity of opinion, but at the same time, really starting to say, well, what do you think is the way that you could create a better world? Because, again, it comes back to that contribution that we've been talking about over this series, because that was what gives people meaning in their lives.
John, is it any wonder people go with the contagion of feeling when you have to tread this sort of precarious balancing act of matching your values against being tolerant of other people's?
Well, it's just a part of growing up. Slowly but surely you have to develop your own sense of what's right. And you have to actually come to that. And then it's difficult at times to actually stand for what you believe is right and to be able to be challenged on it, but to stand strongly. And Philip Zimbardo's work has been very interesting in that he predicted the behaviour that took place at Abu Ghraib. To stand alone is difficult, but it's important to do so. And so slowly over time, as we grow, we develop a sense of who we are in the context of how we behave and our moral underpinnings.
So we live in a world where people generally have the capacity to be much more complex people than their parents were.
Yep.
And the world has offered us that opportunity. And if we can grasp it and really develop our thoughtfulness around some of these issues, it gives us a chance to contribute to our friends and our family and our children, skills that probably our parents didn't have the capacity to pass on to us in many cases.
And in so doing, empowering those people we've passed on some of that stuff to pass on to us as well. So it's an exchange and then they feel empowered as well.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yes.
It becomes contagious.
You've been listening to Three Men and a Feeling.
Yeah.